The chair calls the Education Finance Committee to order for Thursday, March 13th, 2025. And of course, no surprise, but starting next week, Chair Yu Akeem and I will be switching off back and forth. So my quick notes, thank you to everyone as we get ready to go to that. And I'm looking forward to the committee continuing to work in a cooperative fashion. So with that, we do have a quorum present, and with that, Representative Mueller, have you had a chance to review the minutes, and is the font size okay for you?
I have, and Chair, I would move that we would adopt the minutes.
And Representative Mueller moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay, Representative Clardy, welcome to the committee. We're going to start with your bill first, House File 846. And I believe we have three testifiers that have contacted us beforehand.
We have two.
You have two, and then I think there's another on the list. So okay. If you want to bring the two up, that's okay. Mary Dowd and Alvin Chambers. And I'm sorry, it's Marcy. My apology. Representative Clardy, would you like to move your House File 846 before the committee for possible inclusion into a later omnibus bill?
So moved.
Representative Clardy, the bill is in front of us, and please state your name for the record and begin your testimony on your bill.
Thank you, Chair Krisha. Representative Clardy, thanks, Chair Krisha and committee, for allowing me to present House File 846, which supports the Intermediate Teacher Apprenticeship Collaborative. We will call that ITRAC. Okay. This program was developed by Minnesota's four intermediate school districts, and they created a pathway for non-licensed staff to earn a special education licensure while remaining actively engaged in the classroom. The ITRAC program was designed to recruit diverse and highly qualified special ed workforce because we know that there's been a shortage in that area. It offers participants on-the-job training, mentorship, and a journeyman our journey worker teacher, and tuition assistance to help achieve their full licensure. Unlike your traditional student teaching program that might be 12 weeks to 20 weeks, this is a two-year program, and it's on-the-job experience. So apprentices learn while teaching and engaging in the practical work of everyday teaching. They are working with they're working with seasoned teachers as well. And they're completing their education through the University of Minnesota at Mankato. So by the time the participants finish their program, they've earned a bachelor's degree and two licensure in two different licensure areas as well, EBD, or emotional and behavioral disorder, and autism spectrum disorder, ASD, ensuring that they're well trained and prepared to meet the special ed needs in the classroom. So this program has already demonstrated success, and last year with the $1 million that was funded toward this program, we have 24 apprentices that year, and that was in 2024, and then in 2025 we have an additional 15. However, to sustain this innovative initiative and continue on addressing Minnesota critical shortage in special education teaching, additional funds are necessary. So the HF 847 proposes a $3 million annually to expand the apprenticeship within the intermediate school districts. Chair, I do have a couple people here to testify.
And thank you, Representative Clardy. And let's start with Marcy Dowd, Superintendent, Intermediate School 287. I want to make sure I got that correct. Please state your name for the record, and if you could keep your testimony to around 2 to 3 minutes, that'd be helpful.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Marcy Dowd. I'm the Superintendent for Intermediate District 287. First, I want to share that you're going to hear about apprentice programs all day today, and we are in full support. But as the first apprenticeship program, and as we present, we'll share how we're a little bit different as an intermediate when we serve students in special education in a Federal IV setting. Again, I want to thank you for your funding that we received. We were able to launch, and as you heard, we launched. We'll have 23 graduating apprentices in the spring of 26, so that's pretty exciting. We have a little video.
And if you could, we're going to hold off on the videos,
okay.
Just time-wise, but
sure.
We can send the links out later, so
sounds
I'm
going
to keep it to the testimony.
So this collaboration could not have been done without the connection with Mankato University. Reforming teacher apprenticeship is changing the field. And so we used to sit in class. When I got my teaching license, I sat in class and I learned about special education, and then I had 12 weeks to act like I was going to be an expert. That's not how it works. And so this is a two-year immersion program in supporting, and in doing so, you have to acknowledge that the teaching model has to look different. And that's what makes this amazing. And so this collaboration is what made this possible, and people that were willing to think outside the box. Why apprenticeship? Because the average teachers that are out of qualified license is around 9% in the state. But in intermediates, it's 21%. And the reason why is because most colleges do an ABS license, Applied Behavior Specialist. That's for mild to moderate. Our intermediates serve profound to severe. And so it is important that we have a license that is categorical in what we call autism spectrum disorder, emotional behavioral disorders. That's how iTract is different. An ABS license can work anywhere. We need a pathway to support intermediates, not only within the four intermediates in Minnesota, but outstate and co-ops that provide Fed 4 settings. Why the apprenticeship model? The best part about it is we have qualified paraprofessionals in our building every single day who have been with our students, know our students, and are brilliant at building relationships. And you're going to hear from one of mine in just a minute. The biggest thing when we tap on their shoulder and say, "Why are you not a special education teacher?" They're like, "I didn't know about education until I became a paraprofessional. I never thought about it. I have debt from a career I didn't go, complete. Or I have a family or a second job." Taking away that barrier for our adult learners to get a pathway to licensure is critical. So the funding we receive is not overhead. It's direct tuition to our apprentices. And so I want, sometimes people will say, is this a shortened, watered-down version? I know the screen is hard to see. It is absolutely not. And the best part of it is that they get job-embedded experience and as they get credit for the course. And so they're on the job learning just like you would see in the trades. And so I'm going to pass it to Alvin Chambers, who is an apprentice in Intermediate District 287 and part of our first cohort.
And thank you for that. And just so everyone knows, the reason we're not going to do the videos, we have so much enthusiasm and passion for all of this today that I'm trying to make sure we get everybody out. But we will share your materials if you get them to them. Mr. Chambers, if you would take it from there. State your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
Alvin Chambers, thank you. Thank you, Chair and committee members. I am an education support staff in the role of an apprentice teacher working at Intermediate District 287, speaking in the role of an apprentice in order to become a special education licensed teacher. I am speaking in support of Bill SF number 949. I graduated in 2012 with my associate's degree in criminal justice. I always wanted to be a juvenile probation officer working with kids to guide them in the right direction. I've always wanted to work and help kids that had a rough start in life. When I was granted full custody of my daughters, I had to take a break from school due to the lack of time and funds. 8 years ago, I started working at District 287. I never knew the impact that I would have on my students and staff. Over the years, my colleagues would tell me how much of a great teacher I would be. They would say that I should finish school to become a teacher. Little did they know that the funds was low and I really had no time to complete my degree. Last year, this iTrack program popped up and it said that it will pay for my schooling 100%. At the time, I thought it was a hoax. Upon signing up, I realized it was the real deal. It created opportunities for my family and I no longer had to work two jobs and I will be able to focus my energy on becoming a teacher of excellence and be more present for my family. I sit at the table with my daughters, who are ages 15 and 16, and they see me working on my homework and as we work together to pursue my career. They see that it is never too late to fulfill your dreams. I can lead by example. When we are at the kitchen table doing our homework, it puts smiles on our faces and it has an impact on our relationship in a positive way. This hands-on experience is allowing me to add to my skills in a way that is meaningful and applicable to my students that I serve. I have a strong relationship with my students, and I am empowering them to be the best that they can. The work and learn model allows me to even be more impactful in their lives. The ability to obtain my Bachelor's of Science in Special Education with a dual license in SAD and EBD, Emotional Behavior Disorder, and Autism Spectrum Disorder, allows me to serve at Intermediate District 287 with some of the most impactful students in the state. Some students don't have a father. I have learned that I am a role model to most of my students, and the students respond to me. They count on me to be there. As a Black man, I am able to reach out and support them in ways that others can't. I am someone that they can identify with. I am passionate about my work. This bill will assure that others like me will be able to have the same opportunities. Our students deserve a highly qualified, specialized teacher to support them. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Chambers. With that, I'm going to have you two step aside. I do have one more testifier on the list. Caitlin Schneider from Education Minnesota. Ms. Schneider, I invite you to come up. And welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Snyder, representing Education Minnesota. We'd like to thank, if it's all right with the chair, can I provide my feedback for both this bill and Representative Mueller's at the same time?
That would be just fine. Thank you, Ms. Schneider.
We would like to thank both Representative Clardy and Representative Mueller in bringing these issues to the attention of legislators. We are strong supporters of a registered teacher apprenticeship model. There are so many programs wrapped into one comprehensive model here. Student loan relief, paid student teaching, grow your own. The teacher candidates coming through this program are paid for their time and they graduate without any debt. This is particularly well-timed because of the state's investment in the North Star Promise, which allows this funding to go directly into compensating the apprentice and journey teacher and program oversight. My comments today are not a critique of either bill, but an acknowledgement of how big this issue is. While we support this model, we believe most districts do not have the capacity to be competitive under the system designed here. That is why we strongly support the DLI budget proposal to provide funding directly to state sponsors to be able to build and implement programs that both maintain rigorous and consistent standards, as well as provide district and local unions negotiate specific applications aligned to their local settings. This is the model for the vast majority of apprenticeship programs, where unions act as the sponsor of the program, including carpenters, pipe fitters, property service workers, roofers, boiler makers, plumbers, and the electrical workers. The Department of Labor and Industry's budget proposal for use of the workforce development funds identifies labor unions as the place to build those statewide capacity and infrastructure. So why is a statewide model so important? There's two reasons, really. I am a graduate of Roseau High School, Roseau Rams. They are located on the border of Canada, 3 hours away from the nearest teacher prep facility. They do not have the size, capacity, or relationships with the teacher prep program to be able to be competitive in this model. There's also issues with several licensure areas like the blind and visually impaired. So this is a program where if you look at the licensure data, the average age of somebody with a blind and visually impaired license is in the 60s, and that's because Minnesota doesn't have this program. There's no financial incentive for a teacher prep program to offer this program because it's not commercially viable. As a statewide model, we could offer this program and take on the lift of making sure that all of our blind and visually impaired students across the state had their needs met. In the other body, this proposal is being supported as we speak by Hopkins and Robbinsdale districts, as well as Blackman Teach, who we have a formal relationship with. To provide equity to large and small districts across the state, allocating dollars to the statewide union to provide the infrastructure and provide apprenticeship programs for every district, even those with only one possible apprenticeship, is the pathway forward. I remind the committee, There's a little bit of a teacher recruitment issue, but it's largely a teacher retention issue. So having the intense investment that's represented here from this apprenticeship program is a wise use of your dollars. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Schneider, and I appreciate you consolidating both. That's very helpful. With that, members, I have nobody else signed up. Let's go to questions. Representative Bakeberg, you're a co-author on the bill. You have a couple comments.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Clardy. Thank you for addressing this. And really, I'm a co-author on the bill because in my normal life, one of the hardest positions to fill are the EBD or the emotional behavior disorder or ASD, and the autism spectrum disorder positions. And so anything that we can do to really identify who those really good, high quality people are that have a passion for working with kids, you know, anything we do to get them trained is something that I'm going to be very supportive of. You know, obviously the funding issue is an issue we're going to have to face and have a conversation about. But the model and the premise I think is very good. And, you know, to be honest, I have a different perspective than our previous testifier, and that's okay. That's why we have committee and we discuss this. And I think the model that we heard about here, and then, in the next two bills we're going to hear are things that we should be really looking at as a model to be moving statewide. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Representative Ray Rauer.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to say I concur with Representative Bakeberg on this. And also just want to add that this was a school district I was able to visit while the students were there. And they are serving students with very high needs. And I was able to see Mr. Chambers in action, who's in the program. I saw him engage a very reluctant student and was able to draw him out and engage him in the lesson. And not everyone can do this job well. There is as Representative Bakeberg said, a shortage in this special education areas. And so having staff that already want to do this work and already do this work very well, continue to move on and be able to get their teaching license and become a full special education teacher. It's a great way to do this, and it's a successful program. And I also would like to see it continue to grow. Thank you.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clardy, you may not have the answer to this question. I'm hoping there might be someone from MDE in the room who potentially could provide some insight. I'm just looking at the amount in line 2.1 for administration of the grant. Where did the $40,000 number come from? And in the event that, because it says up to, in the event that administrative costs don't take that entire $40,000, what happens to the balance? Does that fold back into the program, or does it go back to us, or how does that function?
And Representative Hudson, I do not see anybody from MDE, and I consulted with nonpartisan. Oh, do we?
Chair.
Oh, there we go. My apologies. And welcome to the committee. And did you hear Representative Hudson's question, or we need to repeat it?
I would very much appreciate it to be repeated again, Representative Hudson.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so my question is regarding the $40,000 mentioned in line 2.1 of potential administrative costs. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering where that number came from, how you anticipate a number like that, and then in the event that it doesn't require the entire $40,000, would those funds fold back into the program and go towards the apprenticeship efforts?
And to the testifier.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Megan Adiola. I'm the Legislative Policy Manager for the Minnesota Department of Education. Representative Hudson, and I'm blanking on whether this was passed last biennium or if this is a policy, but I believe that administrative agencies can retain up to, I want to say, 7%, generally speaking, of grant dollars for administration. Representative Mueller is correcting me live, so thank you, Representative Mueller, up to 5% of the total allocation for grant administration. And with this grant in particular, I can't speak to the exact $40,000, but if the math tracks with what nonpartisan staff identify as
a 5% administrative fee. This is typical of other grants that we have, and Representative Clardy, I believe her testifier has some more to add there.
And if I could, Representative Hudson, and I'm sorry, can you pronounce your last name again?
Adeola.
Adeola. Ms. Adeola, so I just have to be clear, because your words, you said the agency can retain, and I don't believe it's 7%, I believe it's 5%. And just because you can, I don't believe, and I'll just say it for the screen, I don't believe you should. It doesn't sound like we can specifically identify what you're using that for. And I believe the administrative intent that I've been familiar with goes to nonprofits, not necessarily to agents. So that gives me a little bit of pause for concern. I see Representative Clardy, did you want to weigh in?
Actually, my testifier would like to, if that's okay, Chair.
Sure, to the testifier.
Thank you, Chair. As the administrative costs, this is, I just want to make clear, it's four intermediate school districts that serve 45 member districts. So it's not one district. There's four intermediates serving 45 that we're asking for the funds for. And so besides the funds out of the grant, we are braiding funds with local funds, special education dollars, and the pipeline grant to pull this program off.
Okay. And back to the Department of Education, did you want to add to that? And I want to make sure that Representative Hudson gets an answer to his question. That's
absolutely. Thank you for throwing it back to me, Mr. Chair. I can say that when we retained administrative dollars, it is a matter of paying for staff time and attention and appropriately logging staff's actual work for the position. So, for example, in grant programs, not necessarily just to nonprofits, but any grants that we administer, there is somebody that the grantees need to be able to call directly, to email directly, who can get their questions answered, and that does have a number associated with that staff time. So, like I said, it's depending on the level of oversight and on-hand support that grantees may need is kind of what adds to that variance, but it's mostly to ensure that there is a person associated with the grant that grantees can reach out to.
Representative Hudson, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the second part of the question relates to, and this goes beyond this bill, just as a standard practice, you talked about the 5% potential that could be retained for administrative costs. When that entire amount, whether in this case it's 40,000 or 5% of the overall appropriation, is not required for those administrative costs, what happens with the balance between that? Does it go into the purpose of the grant program, or is it retained by the state, or how does that work?
Go ahead to the testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hudson. I don't want to speak erroneously and oversimplify something for the group. I would like to take this back to see what exactly our flow process is that I can provide to the group for how these funds up to 5% is determined and how that difference between actual cost versus anticipated cost rolls out. So I know that is part of how we prepare and set up the grant for administration is this $40,000 is up to this, and I just need to double check about how that money flows or whether it stays in one place. So I want to be 100% certain in my response, Representative.
And so if we could, if it's okay, I'll, why don't you come back to the information? I want to, you know, this is good line of questioning because we are a finance committee. I also don't want to take away from the goodness of the apprentice, but I think it's a valid question. We have limited dollars. So let's wait for the information to come back to us. Representative Green, and then I'll go Representative Green, Representative Quam, and then close with Chair Joaquin. Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you so much, Representative Clardy, for bringing this bill. I just had one quick question. In the development of this bill, did all the four intermediate districts work together to create this bill?
Representative Clardy.
Yes, they did, and in fact, since the program's been in existence, they've also been talking statewide to other partners that possibly could connect with them. So, yes, to answer your question.
Did you want it?
Okay. Representative Quam. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have a follow-up, Representative Green?
Yes, I'll make it very fast. Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for saying that, and I figured that was the case. I just want to give a shout-out, though, to Intermediate District 287 for leading the way here. Their slogan is responsive, innovative, and solutions, and that's exactly what this work is. I think it's actually a model for the whole country. And I know there's another bill floating around about legislators going to spend time in schools. I highly, highly recommend their program, Jump on the Bus, or Get on the Bus, and you can go and visit the different intermediate districts. And that is welcome, and that doesn't need to be legislated. You can just do it. So thank you so much.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this will probably have to be offline to get the response. It'd be nice if the nonpartisan staff could point out this 5% and all these other grants where the 5% is being taken out to cover for FTEs. It'd be nice to see how much of the budget to pay for the staff is coming from these sources instead of a general direct appropriation for funding the staff. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam, and Representative, or I mean, to the nonpartisan, as long as you've taken a note of that. I don't think we need an answer at this point, unless you have one. No, we'll just take that offline. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I have a quick question for Superintendent Dowd, because with Representative Ray Wauer, we toured the program. I've been to your school district before. But you do incredible work with some of our kids that have the highest needs. And I know that you taught me something new when I was there about when you get your bachelor's in special education programming, it doesn't necessarily give you the licensure to then work in a level four. Because level zero to three, they're level one through three, they're fed settings for our kiddos, are in our school, individual school building usually, versus the cooperative, like the intermediate that you do. What did you have to do with Mankato State to get this all into the 2 years? And what are some of the lessons you've learned that you'd like to carry forward?
Superintendent Dowd.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Youakim, thank you for that question. That's what I was sharing about the ABS license. The state of Minnesota went to a cross-categorical license called ABS, and you can support students in special ed with mild needs. In order to work in a setting for three or four, you need to have a categorical license. So if you came out of high college with an ABS license to work with us, you have to go back to school, not necessarily get your master's, but you could, but in a categorical area. And so you think about our issues with retention, finding special education teachers, and then we're saying, oh, yes, anywhere else you may be qualified, but you're not qualified to work for us. And so Mankato, I have to also share, this is a local union agreement with administration and Mankato designing a program where they bring back the categorical license. So what's unique about us that you might hear about other apprenticeship programs is that our apprentices will come out with a dual license in autism and emotional behavioral disorders. And that's critical in order to work in the environment in which we serve students. And what I hope for is that we build this program and open it up, not only for our intermediates, but for our member districts. We are good, really good, at supporting special education, our students in special education. And if we can train apprentices and they work in our member districts, that would be a pay it forward that we would like to do with this apprenticeship model.
Chair Youakim, follow up and close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just remind me again what that number of students that will be graduating next year is, just out of your one program.
Superintendent Dowd.
Thank you, Chair. We'll have 23 graduating in the spring.
Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for doing all the heavy lifting to get this started.
Representative Clardy, sounds like you have lots of good things about your bill. Why don't you go ahead and close this out?
First of all, thank you, committee, for your constructive comments, and we will look into some of the questions that have come up. Three things I want you to remember about this bill is that shortage area, 2 years embedded program, hands-on training, and the last thing, it's been proven to be successful. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Clardy, and the chair lays over House File 846. For possible inclusion into a later, further consideration for a later date. With that, Representative Mueller, House File 1538 is the next bill on the agenda. And if you would come up, and we have a little change. We have Sarah Paul, who's going to co-present with you. And members, I'm going to try to do about 35 to 40 minutes for this. We have a little bit of a list of testifiers. So I want to make sure that everyone gets their say. I think we'll be just fine on time, but that's the chair's goal. And Representative Sensenmayer, you do not have to go through the chair. You're just fine over there. Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chair, I would, before we do the discussion, I would like to move the DE2, please.
How about if we move the bill first?
Oh, how about you do that first? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mueller moves that House File 1538 be re-referred. Oh, no, wait.
Yes.
Representative Mueller moves that House File 1538 be re-referred to the Committee of Workforce, Labor, Economic Development, and Policy. The bill is in front of us, and Representative Mueller, you have an author's amendment. Members, we will adopt the DE2 to put the bill in the shape the author prefers, and then I'll turn to you, Representative Miller, to present your bill. Great. So, members, you have the DE2 in front of you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Representative Mueller, to your bill, House File 1538, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, everyone, for being here. This is something I've been working on for since the moment I've been elected. I've really been excited about this. And so let me just give you a little bit of context of teacher apprenticeships, because we have a lot of things going on here. So the first thing that I want to talk to you about is that teacher apprenticeship program started was first kind of started in Tennessee in 21-22. And registered apprentice programs are federally recognized career pathways where employers develop and prepare their future workforce by providing individuals with paid work experience and relevant instruction that lead to an industry recognized credential. Now, this has been happening in lots of other areas with the trades, and yet education, with all of its quirks and special things, has just started to emerge in this new apprenticeship way. And it's now, even though it was started in Tennessee just only 4 or 5 years ago, it's now starting to expand into other places, and that's really exciting. The benefits of having a registered apprentice program unlocks, able to support the recruitment and the preparation of teachers. Federal and state workforce dollars and grants become available to support the programs, and teacher apprenticeship may also shorten the length of time it takes to complete certification, because you're doing the actual real world in the classroom with the pedagogy lessons at the same time, which is really exciting. It also allows us to diversify the workforce. Teacher apprenticeship programs have the potential solution of diversifying K-12 teacher workforce if designed intentionally with that goal in mind. So I'm really excited to be able to share this bill with you. And so please make sure that you have the DE2 in front of you, because the first bill is completely different. I was trying to get just like the train on the tracks, and then we had a little bit more conversations. And so let me just kind of go through my actual bill real quickly. While I have been working on this issue for several years, this is the first time that I've been on the Jobs Committee. And when I saw in the Governor Walz's budget proposal that he wanted to use the DLI about $5, maybe $7 million to create a statewide registered teacher apprenticeship program, I jumped right on it, because this is something that I've been working on for a long time. So what this is this funding would be used, as I'm trying to do this, recommends $5 million in fiscal year 2026 and $2 million in fiscal 2027. Currently, right now, those spots are blank right now because we're still just working on it, all right? From the Workforce Development Fund to support establishment of a statewide registered teacher apprenticeship program. Funds will be used to support the development of a statewide registered teacher apprenticeship program and joint apprenticeship training committee, JATC. And if you look at the bill, it actually explains who would be on the JATC. And I've worked really hard with a lot of stakeholders to, of course, it's not going to be right in front of me. I've worked really hard to try to make sure that we have included as many people as possible. I want to share with you, there's just a couple of differences that are between the governor's bill and my bill, and then I would like to turn it over to my testifiers. So thank you very much for your indulgence, guys. So currently, my bill appropriates money to DOE for the JATC. The governor's actually asked for the DLI, and I've already talked to the commissioner of DLI, and that was something she suggested, that since these have to be registered apprenticeship programs, that money should actually go through the DLI, and that's something that we have talked about, and I don't really see a problem with changing that. So currently, right now, it's through DOE. My bill spells out specific members of the JATC. The governor's bill does not. My bill requires that the program must include involvement by our school district, structured on-the-job training, instruction from a training program developed by Pelsby, structured wage increase for participants, and a training program that results in Pelsby Tier 3 licensure. Now, in order to be a registered teacher apprentice program, in order to be a registered apprentice program at all, you have to have the five qualities listed in the bill. In the bill, they have it, and I'm just going to, we're going to dig through it. It's going to happen. So on the bill, if you look, sorry, thank you, Mr. Chair. If you look on lines, oh, there it is. If you look on lines 1.21 through 2.5, those are the requirements that a joint apprenticeship, that an apprenticeship program has to have to be federally recognized. And so that's why it's really important that any type of program that we have had others in the past with Grow Your Own and other type of stipends, but they cannot count as registered apprenticeships because they don't have all of those five qualities. And so this bill, with this appropriation, would make sure that the JATC would create a program statewide for all licensure areas that would include these five components. Let's see. My bill requires that DOE consults with DLI and Pelsby, but we're already working on that. And my bill requires a report. The governor, because the way that it is done historically through trade apprenticeships is that they create the JATC, and the fiscal agent is a nonprofit, and that has been a normal thing that has been done with the trades. And I know for some of us that sounds big and scary, but it is something that people have done successfully for years. And so that would be part of the JATC to be able to have that nonprofit, whoever that is identified as, a current nonprofit that could be able to do this. And because I want to make sure that we are still making, that we are ensuring they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, spending the money in a way that makes sense and that they're getting people through the program, I want to make sure there is a legislative report. And then the governor includes specific language prohibiting the money from being used as wages and prohibiting costs to the apprenticeships that my bill currently does not have. And so I'm still in conversation with the with DLI, but what we have within the DE2 is much closer to what I had in the original bill. And so now, Mr. Chair, I have lots of testifiers and I know I'm rambling because I'm so excited about this, but I'd be really excited for you guys to hear our excellent testifiers.
And thank you, Representative Mueller. And with that, let's go to Superintendent Paul for your testimony. If you'd state your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
All right, Sarah Paul, Superintendent with North Branch Area Public Schools, and thank you, Chair Krisha, for the opportunity to testify, and thank you all for the opportunity to share our perspective. As I mentioned, Sarah Paul, Superintendent with North Branch Area Public Schools, and I also am a member of the Department of Labor and Industry Apprenticeship Advisory Committee, and I'm also here, more importantly, representing a cohort of rural school districts. I really appreciated hearing the testimony of Superintendent Dowd and acknowledging her leadership in being the first Metro apprenticeship program, registered apprenticeship program. And I love the language that people are understanding that registered apprenticeship program is something different. I love all the Grow Your Own programs that we have in the state. Registered teacher apprenticeship programs are different. North Branch took the lead on being the first rural school district to be a sponsor of registered apprenticeship programs. So I wear a sponsor hat and a school district hat, and part of the importance of that is talking first of all about our first year that we had our cohort of registered apprenticeships go through and are in implementation. Our North Brant apprentices are 100% of them are on track to get their degree in June of next year, 100%. In our cohort overall, because the thing you're going to hear from me that's really important is that it takes a cohort of school districts to partner to offer these opportunities in rural districts. As Superintendent Dowd shared, her perspective is a little bit different from a metro perspective. Ours is a little different from rural perspectives, and I think you've heard some good examples of that from previous testifiers, that a district, we have a letter that you're going to be getting that is going to walk through what we're asking for as part of this bill, because you'll see all the signatures of the districts so far that are already committed to this partnership. Some need one apprentice. They have not had a licensed teacher in their special education program for years. And this is a huge opportunity to say we have paraprofessionals that have been invested and so excited to get a teacher license, and testifiers previously shared what some of those barriers were. This gives that opportunity across Greater Minnesota to be part of a bigger network of districts so that they can have access to a high-quality program and get that teaching license that they've dreamed of having. So it is a little bit different when we're talking about Greater Minnesota, but the heart of the why is there. I chose not to put my slides up because you're going to see them all here. I tried to provide enough slides that you can walk through on your own and kind of see the story building. I think that I'm hearing that there's been a really good understanding that registered teacher apprenticeships are different. In this letter that's signed by the initial 10 districts, you're going to see that we're asking for approximately $1.65 million over each year, and that's to fund 35 registered apprenticeships. And one thing that we wanted to bring to you was that you're not going to see an administrative cost in here. That is funding that's going directly to share in the cost of this innovation. Approximately $20,000 is what it takes for an apprentice to go to college. This would be an allocation of $10,000 to go to each apprentice. It also, a school district, approximately across our districts, it takes $60,000 to fund this position. It's coming in at half of that cost. So we're trying to partner because we know that we have to provide a sustainable model for this to be something that we carry forward, but innovation takes investment. Our school district as a sponsor and as a district having apprentices, we didn't get any funding last year, but we made it happen. That's what we're doing with other districts that have a critical need to have that embedded training, that you're earning more money on your wage. Your hourly wage goes up as you get closer to your degree. There's some built-in incentives, and it's working. It's funding something in action that's working today instead of putting more money into planning things. That it's a both-and piece, but for us, we just want to make sure to share the story of fund what works. Let us scale this model across Greater Minnesota, replicate what happened in our first cohort, replicated in a second cohort, because we're excited for you to see in the video that you is attached in the presentation. You can hear from our journey teachers, they're coming alive in their profession because for 2 years they get to work with somebody and be part of their story. You have an apprentice that is committed to working in a school culture that invests in people to grow and be better. And so with that, a lot of what you're hearing here is about why this local component that is paired with having to partner with school districts to offer programming with a licensure program is partnership, and you got to have shared commitments around that. And then, as Superintendent Dow shared, we're independent school districts. We have relationships with our local unions. We have relationships with our staff that have to be cultivated and agreed upon, and they don't look exactly the same in each school district. And so we're looking for this coordinated uniqueness support, which the letter lays out in more detail. And I would just like to pass it off to Chair McMillan. You'll hear in the video, he says, it takes courage to innovate. Our school board and school boards across the state are innovators. They want to bring forward lasting solutions, and so I want to make sure to give an opportunity to share his perspective.
Very good. And thank you, Superintendent Paul. And members, there is a video that has been submitted, and we'll get that out to you, and thank you for the slides. Mr. McMillan, if you could be brief, and then I want to get to the rest of the testifiers. So go ahead and state your name for the record and begin.
My name is Tim McMillan. I'm the school board chair in North Branch, Minnesota. So I hope I can bring as much passion as Superintendent Paul did to her testimony, and I want to thank Representative Mueller for sponsoring Bill 1538. And what we heard today should not be ignored by Mr. Chambers. I think what you've heard from his testimony is a true testament of what we see your decision making and how it impacts people's lives. And we have 9 of those people in North Branch that are underneath our existing cohort. And as you can see, your decision making really does affect people. And Mr. Chambers really spoke eloquently to that today. So I have 3 buckets of information that I want to go through today about why we support Representative Mueller's bill. The first one is that, and we've heard it before in Superintendent Paul's testimony, but this bill allows local control to support a second cohort of apprentices in Minnesota and in North Branch. We currently have apprentices in place with 9 future teachers that Superintendent Paul referred to. And again, this support changes lives. The second bucket is really that this bill provides rural districts like ours with a viable option to address our staffing shortages when we are in competition with metro salaried districts. We know that rural districts struggle even harder to find these positions because of the pay and because of just our location in general. The third bucket is really the bill allows rural districts to work with staff embedded already in our schools and provides them a pathway for teacher licensure. And this is probably one of the most important pieces, because one of the biggest impacts is that these apprentices have already formed professional relationships with our students, mm-hmm. and we want to make sure that our students get the best education possible. And with already utilizing teachers that are embedded in our schools, that connection is already there. So everything we presented on today is that, so we place highly prepared educators in our rural districts and other districts like ours to educate our youth. As Superintendent Paul stated, we have 10 rural districts signatures on this letter of support. And I just want to offer up both Superintendent Paul's and my time that if committee members have any more questions or want to hear more about the North Branch cohort, you can always come out to our district. We're willing to come down and meet and talk with you. So this is your opportunity to really dig in a little deeper if you want to learn more. So thank you.
Very good. And I'll ask the 2 testifiers if you step aside. And then I have, and thank you both, I have Gina Boots and Colleen Feller, both from BrightWorks Service Cooperative. Ms. Boots, if you'd start your testimony and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Gina Boots. I'm the teacher and apprenticeship liaison from BrightWorks Service Cooperative. I am here today I came from Intermediate District 288 and was part of the beginning design team that got the first teacher apprenticeship program off the ground through iTrack. And have since moved into this role as sponsor. The 4 intermediate districts chose BrightWorks as the sponsorship of their registered apprenticeship program. And I've spent the last 2 years really diving into this work. So working really hard to implement the program and have oversight over the 4 districts currently running it. Of those last 2 years, I have spent hours with other states and other industries and working closely with the Department of Labor and Industry, the state agency that oversees all registered apprenticeship programs. And through all of that work and through the implementation of this program and collaboration with the Minnesota State University Mankato and all of our district partners, we've worked really hard to build out an effective apprenticeship program. We're continuously learning and improving as the program evolves. We keep saying it's progress, not perfection. And I have worked also with many districts that have received planning grants to develop their own apprenticeship programs. So you're gonna hear from St. Thomas University, who's partnered with St. Paul Public Schools in Spring Lake Park to do special ed and elementary ABS programs. As well as the goal to launch programs that have a goal to launch in the fall under BrightWorks sponsorship, which is Wilmer Public Schools, who's partnered with Southwest State University for a dual licensure elementary education and ABS degree, and multiple districts from across the state, from rural districts like Warren, Alvarado, Oslo, to North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale. There's 5 to 7 districts right now that we're working with that are partnering with the University of Minnesota and 4 of their campuses, from Duluth, Morris, Twin Cities, and Crookston. I've met with many districts and charter schools across the state that grows by the week, interested in joining existing registered apprenticeship programs or develop their own. I love the teaching profession, and I left a job I adored to move into this role because I believe in this pathway not only to increase the teacher pipeline, but increase retention of our teachers. And as a school administrator, I know the strain that staffing shortages put on all levels of a school system. So districts need added pathways to teaching and lack the capacity to do all of this on their own, which you've heard today. Apprenticeship is new to teaching, as we heard, but it's not new to the state of Minnesota. And I have spent hours learning from all of those other industries and other states that are trying to get this off the ground. And so therefore, BrightWorks has stepped forward as a statewide sponsor. And we have launched our Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee with the guidance from the Department of Labor and Industry, which is made up of 50%, oh, you have it in front of you, 50% union and 50% management, and we have metro and rural representation on that committee. We have received a grant to build out pre-apprenticeship programming to increase access to candidates needing that 0 to 60 credits that is needed in order to enter into an apprenticeship program. And we are working to collaborate with the DLI and local workforce boards to get WIOA funds and access to those. We have multiple meetings with the University of North Dakota.
And Ms. Boots, could you get to a close?
Sorry.
I know you have a lot, and we have a lot in front of us.
It's okay. And it's okay. I've had multiple meetings with North Dakota to build out the blind visually impaired. I have one just this week on working on that. And I have been working with the University of Minnesota, who you will hear from, about DHH as well, that's the hard of hearing licensure area as well. So statewide sponsorship brings sustainability for both fidelity of programming and funding through systemization. And I would propose that we utilize what's in the governor's budget and other industries for the last 80 to 100 years, and structuring it through a formula basis like the National Education Apprenticeship Intermediary does. They tie the funding to a registered apprentice, to each registered apprentice, and so it would be a per funding thing. So for a metro district that might have one apprentice, they would get the funding times one on that tuition and stipend support. If one that has six, they'd get it times six. But the funds flow through a JATC as it does through other industries and has been for a very long time. And I will leave it at that, so apologies. Thank you.
And thank you. And we have Colleen Feller from BrightWorks as well. And so I don't know if you're echoing the same thing or you're just adding, so.
Hi, thank you, Chair. No, I'm just here to answer any questions about the Minnesota Service Cooperatives as needed.
Very good. And so with that, I'm going to have you two step aside, and let's go to Kelly Crick Oburn from the University of St. Thomas, and then Aaron Larson, Director of Apprenticeship, Minnesota DLI, if you could come up as well, and I'll do those two next.
Hey, good to see you again.
And Ms. Oburn. If you can state your name for the record, begin your testimony, and make sure you get your name right.
Dr. Kelly Crick Oburn, thank you, Chair. Representatives, I co-lead the development of the University of St. Thomas's Registered Apprenticeship Program for Teaching in partnership with Dr. Susie Kabeck, who couldn't be here today because she's preparing future educators this afternoon. I'm here to support teacher apprenticeships in our state and to provide context and to provide some context and history. The University of St. Thomas has the longest running teacher residency program in the state. Established through strong and sustained partnerships, 10 years with St. Paul Public Schools, 9 years with Minneapolis Public Schools, and 4 years in partnership with a consortium of 15 charter schools. Together with our residency partners, we have prepared a total of 406 highly qualified Minnesota educators. This is important history to know, because as we work to build our undergraduate registered apprenticeship program, the infrastructure and the experience and the success of our residency program are assets that we will bring to developing apprentices, mentor teachers, our journey workers, and to the reciprocal collaboration we have with our districts as well as other educator preparation programs. As a leader in educator preparation pathways, partnership pathways specifically, we are well positioned to innovate in the registered apprenticeship space. And we were fortunate enough to be awarded an apprenticeship planning grant from Minnesota Department of Education last June, as well as a handful of other educator preparation programs. There's a number of folks building programs as we speak. For the past 10 months, in partnership with St. Paul Public Schools and in partnership with St. Paul Federation of Educators, we have been building an apprenticeship program for teaching. The development of our pathway has benefited greatly from consultation that Gina Boots from Brightworks has provided, and we're deeply appreciative of the communication and the collaboration that Mankato State has provided, that iTrack has provided. They've been gracious about helping us learn as we go, learn from their experience and from their process. University of St. Thomas's AA to BS undergraduate apprenticeship program will fill a critical need and fill a critical gap, removing barriers and increasing access for working adults, paraprofessionals, and other non-licensed staff in St. Paul schools who are aspiring educators to pursue their undergrad degree and teaching license. To date, 95 St. Paul Public School staff members, non-licensed staff members, are interested in this pathway. For our partner, St. Paul Public Schools, it's not financially tenable to maintain both a robust graduate residency program and simultaneously launch a pilot undergraduate apprenticeship program. Today I'm asking you to support funding for statewide coordination of equitable distribution of funds for registered apprenticeship programs without reducing ongoing support for existing well-established and highly successful residency programs as we have at St. Thomas, including those that support charter schools. Both residencies and apprenticeships are critically needed to meet Minnesota workforce needs. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. And Ms. Larson, Director of Apprenticeship, Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today regarding House File 1538. My name is Erin Larson. I direct the Apprenticeship Division at the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. First, I want to thank Representative Mueller for meeting with Commissioner Nicole Blissenbach and me yesterday. We appreciate and share the same goal of creating additional pathways into the teaching profession and agree that registered apprenticeship for teachers are a successful model to bring more highly skilled individuals into the profession. I will note that the committee that DLI has its own statewide teacher apprenticeship proposal that is part of Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's 2025 budget. We propose this statewide approach for registered teacher apprenticeship to enable more school districts to offer programs and provide a standardized, high-quality experience for apprentices. For committee members who may be unfamiliar with registered apprenticeship is a time-tested, employment-based training system that combines on-the-job instruction, related classroom instruction, and that on-the-job learning happens under the support of a mentor or a journey worker. Apprentices are paid a progressive wage scale as they gain new skills, and they're supervised, like I mentioned, by a mentor at the worksite. At the completion of their program, apprentices earn a nationally recognized credential for their occupation. Currently, Minnesota has more than 11,000 active registered apprentices across the state in more than 200 programs. DLI has registered 3 teacher apprenticeship programs that are currently serving 45 apprentices. Apprentices in these programs earn special education licenses upon completion. Additional occupations, as you've heard, and additional licensure areas can and likely will be included in registered teacher apprenticeships in the future. Registered teacher apprenticeship programs for K-12 education require 6,000 hours of on-the-job learning and at least 144 hours of classroom instruction each year. Competencies for on-the-job learning are based on the Minnesota Professional Educators and Licensing Standard Board's, or PELSBY's, 2023 standards of effective practice. Related classroom instruction is provided by a PELSBY-approved teacher preparation program to ensure the completion of that apprentices, when they complete their program, receive their Tier 3 teacher licensure. Returning to the bill, because DLI is responsible for regulating registered apprenticeship programs in Minnesota and ensuring compliance with state and federal regulations, one change we would like to recommend to House File 1538 is that instead of appropriating funds to the Commissioner of Education, the bill instead appropriates funds to the Commissioner of Labor and Industry. Administering grant funding with DLI would streamline processes for registered teacher apprenticeship programs, ensure program compliance to state and federal regulations, and increase access to technical assistance from our office. We look forward to continued conversation with Representative Mueller about House File 1538 and approaches to growing and sustaining registered teacher apprenticeship programs in Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Larson. We do have two remote testifiers, and so I'll have you two step aside. And the first one will be Chris Pitcha, Director of Human Resources, Owatonna School District, and then Frankie. I'm just butchering these. I feel bad. Director of Next Gen Teach, University of Minnesota. So, Mr. Pitcha?
Miss. Chris Pitcha.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Name for the record and begin your testimony.
I'm Chris Pitcha. I'm the Director of Human Resources and Student Affairs for Owatonna Public Schools. Thank you for allowing all of us to come and testify today for Bill 1538. It's really appreciated. A lot of things have already been said about the teacher apprenticeship program, so I'm not going to go back and re-describe what a registered teacher apprenticeship program is. I just want to, I'll probably get you guys back on track with time and just let you know what our experience has been with the teacher apprenticeship program. When it was first brought out in a meeting with DLI called, I think it was May of 23, I was super pumped about this program because I knew we had quite a few paraprofessionals that would make wonderful, wonderful teachers. They just didn't have the means to do it or the time to do it based on several reasons. And I think the teacher apprenticeship program is a great pathway, I would say, for some of your more non-traditional type students. For instance, we have a single mom with two children. She wouldn't be able to do this get her teaching license, who will be a fabulous teacher without the program. We have a grandmother that's taking care of is guardian of her grandchildren. So she's very busy in the evening. So this is a perfect way for her to get her teaching license. Then we also have a mom with a child with severe needs. So a lot of her time while she's at home goes to working with her child. So this is a great experience for these individuals. It provides a lot of collaboration with the journey teachers. It provides a lot of collaboration between the apprentices. And our setup is a little bit different than some of the other apprentice programs. We have one journey teacher per two apprentices, which after many discussions with the journey teachers, the apprentices, and the staff at MSU Mankato, they said it's a great model because they can turn to each other if they need some assistance or if they need working together on a project. It has been wonderful, they take their courses in a conference room right across from my office, and I see them so hard at work. I go in and say hi. They are smiling. They are so, so appreciative of this program. Every time I see one, they say thank you, thank you, thank you, even though I was just part of the design team and got it up and running. But one of the reasons we are all here is, at least in our district, and I guess Owatonna, you could say we're an outstate district, is right now with the unavailability of funds or the high competitiveness for grants, it's I don't know how our program could be sustainable year after year without some funding. We fund the wages for the apprentices, and right now we are using a partial grant through MSU, I think for this spring semester to help with the tuition. But after that, then the district will have to fund, you know, find funds to fund both the tuition and the wages. So it'd be much appreciated, you know, we'd be much appreciated if we can get some funding through this bill.
And thank you, Ms. Pika, for your testimony. And next we'll go to, I believe, Ms. Frankie, Director of Next Gen Teach, University of Minnesota.
Good afternoon, Chair Kreshaw and Representative Mueller and members of the committee. My name is Danae Franke, and I am the Director of Next Gen Teach at the University of Minnesota in the College of Education and Human Development. I'm here in support of House File 1538 as it relates to funding teacher apprenticeships as a pathway to teacher licensure in the state of Minnesota. Given the critical need to recruit, prepare, and retain special education teachers in our state, I've been working for the past year to launch a teacher apprenticeship model with the university's four campuses, Crookston, Duluth, Morris, and Twin Cities, and seven urban and rural district partners to launch our first cohort the fall of 2025 in academic behavior strategists and early childhood special education with BrightWorks as our sponsor. As the related technical instruction provider, I fully believe this model can be a solution to our devastating teacher shortage in special education across the entire state. In the past year, I've been able to meet with paraprofessionals from communities such as Warren, Alvarado, Oslo, district leaders and special education cooperatives from the Morris area, and potential candidates from many of our urban districts such as Columbia Heights, Hopkins, North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale. In all of these communities, there are several highly qualified working professionals that are interested in getting their special education teaching license, but the barriers of time and money continue to interfere with their desires. The apprenticeship model allows candidates to continue working and being paid as apprentices in schools while they meet the requirements needed to attain a Tier 3 teaching license and a bachelor's degree from an approved provider. In this model, they get to work, learn, and immediately apply what they're learning in schools in real time with real kids in their own communities. The leaders that I've collaborated with are really excited about this model as it is a workforce strategy that's a pipeline to fill needed paraprofessional positions and then special education teaching positions while also creating teacher leaders as journey workers. Finally, I'll add that funding this model across the state is extremely important to all of our communities. The rural districts I've been working with are frankly desperate to fill their positions in special ed. They just do not have a pipeline of folks with the resources needed to attain their teaching license. Supporting this district-serving model will allow us to meet the critical needs we have in special education for students and families in communities of all sizes across our state. Thank you, Chair Kreshaw, Representative Mueller, and members of the committee.
And thank you, Ms. Franke. I want to make sure I got that right.
Perfect.
I don't always get them well, but thank you very much for your testimony. And with that, members, that concludes the list of testifiers. I'm going to go to member questions, and I have Representative Sensor Mira, you're first. And I'll come back around. Representative Clardy, you're a co-author on the bill, and you're also part, you have a bill with them. Did you want to make any comments before I move on?
Just briefly, I think it's a great bill. I really like that you're enforcing the importance of a qualified apprenticeship program. So thanks for bringing the bill.
Thank you. And with that, I'll come over to Chair Joaquim. I do have Sensor Mira on the list, but Anna, give her a little bit of time. So Chair Joaquim.
Thank you. Actually, I have a question, and I'm not sure. Is Superintendent Dowd still here?
Superintendent Dowd, if you'd come up to the test fire stand, please.
Oh, she can go over here.
Since we have somebody that's helping run one in the school, this I think you could answer this question for me, too. I know, having had a spouse in education for 30-plus years, he's had plenty of student teachers. I know that program's usually 10 to 12 weeks long. And most of the time, those teachers don't get any training on how to be a mentor teacher as with student teachers in the classroom. Sometimes they do. But this program is really different with 6,000 hours in the classroom. Do the journey teachers get some special training? Because that's one of the concerns I have. I'm glad it's looking like it's going through DALI. because that piece would really be missing. 6,000 hours is a lot different than 400.
Superintendent Dowd.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, it is critical that they work together. So they also meet with the university and their apprentice together to support the content that the apprentices are going through, and then being able to implement it in the classroom, give coaching for that immediate feedback. And so it is a collaborative event with both the journey worker and the apprentice, and that's in all of the registered apprenticeship models.
Chair Youakim? No problem. Representative Sensenmiller, and we'll speak quietly.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies. I don't know if this was asked while I was out, but I have one question for the author and then another question. So for the author, for what you are imagining for the program, I know that it's a partnership between university, between Dolly, between the school district, and then obviously the apprentice. Who would the funding go towards? Like, would it go towards all of those entities? Would it go towards one of the entities?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensenmiller. So I have... as I've been doing a lot of research, each state does this very differently. Like Tennessee just bolstered their grow your own. And so with Minnesota having such a strong apprenticeship model already in other trades and other vocations, we were taking that same model approach. And so the funding would be, the fiscal agent would be that nonprofit that has, that it makes sure it's a third party, make sure it's the something that is able to look at things with, you know, authenticity and fidelity. And then the JATC would decide how they would allocate the funds to make sure that it goes to the districts where they need to make sure that each cohort was paid for their tuition, for their for any of their extra training and all of those things. Now, I will say we do have two experts right here, and they would be able to explain in more detail on how it practically works now. The JATC that would be created for the statewide program would have to go and kind of wrestle through all of those details.
Representative Sensenmiller, did you want one of the test fires to answer as well?
I guess you have the test fires. If anything to add, would love to hear. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you, Chair. One thing I just think is important to set the context is that as to bring these programs forward currently, you need to get approval from PELSBY first for the licensure program. So in our case, Minnesota State Mankato worked with PELSBY to make sure that their program could be approved to be run as a registered teacher apprenticeship program. Then the school district or entity that is going to be a sponsor of the programs needs to work with the Department of Labor and Industry to get approved on all of the elements that Representative Mueller referred to that make it a registered apprenticeship program. So there's oversight that for those of us that were, you know, first through, it took a lot of time back and forth, but that's what gives you the quality stamp that makes you feel confident that you have a high quality program. So there's oversight existing that I can speak to now how it works. In terms of adding another layer, in terms of the JATC, I think I would not be the best one to speak to that.
Representative Sensenmiller, follow up.
Thank you. I have a couple additional questions. So then my next one is, so to make it a registered apprenticeship program, is that a federal designation?
Representative Mueller?
It is. It is a federal recognition, and the things that I outlined on 1.21 all the way through 2.5, those are things that are required to be done in order to be federally recognized as an apprenticeship program.
Representative Sensenmiller.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I think my question is, for it to have the federal designation, does that come with any like matching funds from the federal government? And then my other question is there anything in the federal designation around like what the partnership with unions needs to look like? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensenmiller brain. So you have the potential to get federal dollars. That was kind of the draw when Tennessee did this back in 2022, is that they did have both dual state and federal dollars. But that's not for sure. But to have you be a recognized federal apprenticeship program, you do have that opportunity to receive it. As for how things are set up with unions, it is required by,
and you can check with Dolly just to make sure, you are required to have 50% of the GATC board to be union represented.
Representative Sensenmuir.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Representative Mueller? Representative Paul. Superintendent Paul.
Thank you, Chair. One of the things about being with involvement with local unions is that we each of our districts has our own separate contracts with our local unions, but we did put together a memorandum of agreement. Every district that's part of our second cohort that is connected to the funding we're requesting is working in partnership with their local unions, because that wage progression is a requirement that we negotiated. And in addition, our journey teachers, these are experienced teachers that have had tried different ways that they were part of Grow Your Own programs, and it was exhausting. And we don't want to burn out our current educators to take on responsibilities. And so that conversation looks a little bit different across different districts, and that's why that's an important piece that we negotiated into a memorandum of agreement with our teachers union as well, so that not only what compensation for stipend, but ongoing professional development. I really appreciated the earlier question about what training is involved in this, because all of our apprentices attend eight additional PD days in our district, in our agreement. That may differ across different districts, but for us, that was a high priority, was to have that ongoing training for apprentices. In addition, we have release time, and we've worked within our constraints for substitutes, et cetera, to make sure that we had proactively planned somebody to cover the class so they could get training on coaching and coming alongside apprentice teachers, because they didn't want to be the supervisor, but they wanted to have more training on that coaching. So thank you for that question.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. If you do look on the DE2, I do have that the JATC has to be consisted of all the things. And it starts on 1.11 to 1.17. I wanted to make sure that, yes, the unions are there and that they are part of that and that we have them a big part of our area or a part of the JATC. And some of these could be overlapped as well, but I wanted to make sure that everyone had a seat at the table, that the people that we have licensed teachers there, we have superintendents, principals, other school administrators, Pelsby's there, Dolly's there, all, and then we also have the unions that are there. And that's important, because as they continue to work through this JATC and look at how this is going to work with our union structure, it's going to be important that admin is in part of those conversations.
And Representative Sensenmuir, do you have anything else?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Mueller, thank you. If you could go to closing comments for your bill, and then we do have another bill, and we're going to try to get to presentations yet today. So thank you to all the testifiers. Representative Mueller, quick close.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you guys for listening to this. As you can tell, I'm super excited about it. Since the start of this in Tennessee in 2022, we now have over 45 states that have implemented some sort of apprenticeship program. And so most recently, Colorado, Delaware, Nebraska, Oregon, South Dakota. There are so many people that are taking advantage of this pathway, and I'm really excited for Minnesota to join them. So thank you to my co-authors. I think Bakeberg is on here. I know that Representative Clardy and Representative Josiah Hill are on my bill. And so thank you for the bipartisan effort for that. And I look forward to also seeing how it works as we send it to workforce.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. So if I have this right, the DE2 involves an NP that will go to JETC, that involves DLI and MDE and PLSB, Pelsby, to get AID to ISDs.
Yes.
Okay. All right. With that, thank you, Representative Mueller. Renews her motion that House File 1538 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Workforce, Labor, and Economic Finance and Policy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. You're on your way. Representative Mueller, you can stay up there. And if you, our last bill on the agenda is House File 1959. Representative Mueller moves House File 1959 before the committee with the chair's intent to lay over the bill for possible inclusion at a later date. Representative Mueller, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. If you were in education policy, this is going to be fairly similar. So this is a bill that I received from Teach Minnesota, which is a
alternative pathway program that has been approved by PELSBY. And basically what this bill does is that this bill would allow expanded opportunities for programs that are not traditional four-year programs, but are still programs that are approved by PELSBY to access the grants. Now, I realize that there are questions about what some of these grants are and that we're going to have the discussions in earnest about, you know, how much money some of these are, whether they still exist. I understand that, but that's not what this bill is about. That's not what this bill is about. This bill is about, as we have these grant programs, we want to make sure that anyone who is approved by PELSBY as a teacher pathway program has access to them. There are no things changing. Like there is nothing in statute that says like these alternative pathways cannot apply for grants, but we want to be very clear that any PELSBY-approved teacher preparation programs can access these grants. The bill does not change eligibility for state grant programs, but it clarifies that they can apply for funding. I had a much longer thing to read, but for sake of time and because several of you had already heard it before, I would ask that you would move to our testifiers, please, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Miller. And remember, this bill will be laid over. If I could get the testifier from the Legislative Liaison of Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education to come up. I believe it's Mogelson, but I want to make sure I get that right. And then we do have one testifier remotely. So, Ms. Mogelson, if you could state your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
Yes. Yes, thank you. My name is Laura Mogelson, and I'm here from the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Preparation. Thank you, Representative Mueller. I am here following up on the hearing in education policy just to clarify some questions that came up in ed policy. And if you can all look in your materials, I created this table quickly yesterday just to illustrate some of the grant programs that were that are in this bill and clarifying who the agency is that actually administers the bill, who can apply for the funding, who is already eligible for it, and then who it benefits. So let's just start, we'll start on the left with Grow Your Own. So Grow Your Own, as you know, for the past 5 years has seen a huge expansion. And this is money that districts apply for. So programs don't apply for this funding. It's money that districts apply for. And then they can use that money to support their community members, paraprofessionals, substitute teachers, teacher candidates, tier two teachers, anybody that really they want that doesn't have an initial teaching license yet to get this funding. So it can be a higher ed partnership. It can be alternative prep. Districts can have multiple partners in their Grow Your Own effort. The special ed pipeline is exactly the same, except for it has a focus on special education licensure. I want to point out, too, that these higher ed programs that are PELSBY approved are, especially when it comes to special education, post-baccalaureate, so they're not the four-year programs. They're actually post-bac programs and serving large numbers of tier two teachers. So it's not just alternative prep that's serving the needs of tier two teachers. It's also higher ed approved teacher prep programs. And then we have these programs that are administered by the Office of Higher Education. So that's the Student Teacher Grants, the Aspiring Teachers of Color Scholarship Program, and the Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program. So these are ones that I think if there were to be changes in how they're administered and what the eligibility is for them, it should go through the Office of Higher Education. And I do want to just point out on the third one, the student teacher grants, right now we currently have three running in the state. One is the pilot program that y'all passed last year, and then we have the underrepresented one and the shortage area one. These are ones that the teacher candidates themselves apply for, so programs don't apply, teacher candidates apply. And then I just put a question there about tier two teacher candidates. Just something for you to ponder on your own regarding those student teacher support funds. Is this something that the legislature is interested in having go to Tier 2 teacher candidates, or is the point of these programs more to support people who are not currently being paid, so student teachers that are not being paid versus Tier 2 teachers? And then I want to point out CUGMEC, which is currently administered by Pelsby. There is a move to have that go to MDE moving forward. That's a part of Pelsby's bill. And that one is right now only eligible for higher education to apply for, but it does benefit both undergrad and grad students, including Tier 2 teachers. And one, the one that's really different between compared to all the other ones is the teacher mentorship program. So there's two, one from MDE, one from Pelsby, and those are usually they're administered out of both of those, and I think there's a desire to have those come together. And the applicants for those programs are usually collaborations of districts and schools and teachers. So, and that one I don't see is something that some an organization like TNTP wouldn't currently have access to right now, as well as the Grow Your Own and the Special Ed. So I just wanted to give you this chart, this structure. I saw a teachable moment when I watched the ed policy hearing, and so I thought I would put this together here, and I'm available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Very good. And yes. Thank you very much. This is actually quite helpful, so appreciated. And with that, let's move to our remote testifier from Teach Minnesota.
Chair, Representative Mueller, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Megna Sahoni, and I am with Teach Minnesota, which is a program of TNTP. I'm here in support of House File 1959, which would clarify access to state funds for Pelsby-approved alternative certification and preparation programs, specifically where it is named that only institutes of higher education can currently apply. Teach Minnesota certifies teacher candidates to receive their Tier 3 license in both elementary and special education. And candidates take coursework and pay full tuition costs, similar to institutes of higher education. And to just share a little bit more about Teach Minnesota, we know that all of Minnesota's young people deserve access to high-quality teachers who can provide them with excellent academic experiences. And so Teach Minnesota really seeks to do just that by recruiting, selecting, and training highly effective educators to address shortages, increase educator effectiveness, and ultimately change outcomes for students in Minnesota. So Teach Minnesota, over the course of 3 years, has had over 90 teachers who've started teaching. 88% of our teachers continue to teach beyond their first year, and 86% are local to Minnesota. All of our teachers are hired as Tier 2 teachers of record while completing the program, offering participants the full salary and benefits of a Tier 2 teacher. I will name, while they are a full-time salary Tier 2 teacher, they're concurrently taking coursework and instruction, where the tuition costs come into play, and where they could benefit from some financial resources as well. And to name, our model is fairly highly effective and rigorous in alignment with state standards. A mathematical policy research study found that students taught by novice TNTP-trained math teachers outperform students of novice comparison teachers by roughly 4.5 months of additional learning. House File 1959 would allow Pelsby-approved alt prep and certification programs like Teach Minnesota to provide our teacher candidates access to an affordable, cost-effective, and really rigorous pathway into teaching. It would mean that our teachers are supported financially, or at least have the opportunity to apply to grants where they are able to do so, and have the resources needed to support their careers as excellent educators that students in Minnesota deserve. Really appreciate your time and consideration today.
And thank you. And if you could state your name for the record, I did not do so because I wanted to get it correctly.
Megna Sahoni.
Very good. And thank you for your testimony. With that, members, that concludes the testifiers that I have on the list. Representative members, we can have a brief discussion on this. It sounds like it was fairly robust in policy, so I'll allow a couple questions, but we do have a presentation. Otherwise, I do not have anybody on the list. We can go to the close. Representative Lee.
I'll try to be quick. Thank you, Chair. I guess I'm just curious. I know there was a discussion in policy, but are we hearing it because it doesn't cost money, but it moves money?
So it's a belt and suspenders. I'll just leave it there. So, yes.
Okay. And then I guess the other question is if this is just for Teach Minnesota, I'm curious if it's like a nonprofit or a quasi-state agency, or just kind of curious what the nature of the organization is. I don't know who can answer that.
Yeah. Representative Mueller, do you have an answer?
Yeah, thank you so much. And Representative Chair and Representative Lee, yes, this question was kind of brought up in policy, and people were like, oh, hang on, that kind of stumped us. So I got some more clarity. Teach Minnesota, and this we don't specifically say Teach Minnesota. This is just anyone who is qualified by PELSBY as an alternative pathway program. This just came from me from Teach Minnesota. So Teach Minnesota acts as a credentialing body, which means that they also provide direct instruction for fellows, and they pay tuition for coursework they take, similar to how someone does in an institution of higher learning.
Okay. Representative Lee, quick follow-up, and then I want to go to close.
I guess so. The answer is it could be whatever, as long as it falls under the bill. That's it. I'm good. Thanks.
And if I'm just going to go, Ms. Parra, would you just give a quick summary, just make sure we all have exactly why the bill is in front of us, and then I'll go to Chair Joachim close. Are you good? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So the bill allows this particular type of program to qualify for programs that this committee appropriates money for.
Very good, and I'll help out. And members, the other side of this is the presentation you're about to hear will roll right off of this. So the reason you have the bill is teeing us up for that. So, Representative Mueller, softball, hit it out of the park, and we'll go on to the presentations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I just want to be very clear. This doesn't mean that automatically they get grant money. They just have the opportunity to apply to this money. As long as they're a PELSBY-approved alternative pathway, it can be they have the ability to apply for it. Doesn't mean they're automatically getting that. So it passed unanimously out of education policy, and so I'm really excited for us to be able to talk about this in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. And thank you, Representative Mueller. And the Chair lays over House File 1959 for possible inclusion into an omnibus bill or further consideration at a later date. Thank you for your presentation. And thank you, members. We have about 14 minutes. Should be enough time. So with that, you have some materials in your packet. I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Parra right away. And we're going to go into presentation on teacher recruitment programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Committee members, you have in front of you an overview of various teacher recruitment programs that are funded by the legislature. As you've heard, there are a number of shortage areas in the state, and so some of the teacher recruitment programs are geared toward those. Can you hear me?
You're doing
better. Okay. So a number of those programs are geared towards filling those shortage areas, special ed in particular, and a number of other programs are geared towards increasing the number of teachers of color and American Indian teachers. And then some programs fund districts, some programs fund the teacher preparation programs, and others go directly to the candidates. So you've previously reviewed spreadsheets, the tracking sheets that Ms. Beckel has provided you that show the amount of funding that the legislature has appropriated to each program, so I won't go through that, but Ms. Beckel is your source if you're looking for those amounts. There are the Grow Your Own grants, which several testifiers referenced, and there are actually two type of Grow Your Own programs. One is where a district, charter school, tribal contract school, or cooperative unit, I'm just going to say districts for short, but a lot of these programs apply to all four of those types of entities, to partner with a teacher preparation program to establish a pathway for an adult to obtain a professional teaching license. Very often that's a paraprofessional or other unlicensed person that works in the district. And at least 80% of the grant funds are to provide tuition scholarships or stipends for those candidates. And as Representative Mueller mentioned, in Tennessee, for example, a Grow Your Own program became the teacher apprenticeship program. But each state has different requirements for their Grow Your Own programs. The second type of Grow Your Own is to recruit or to motivate secondary school students to enter the teaching profession. And so those grants also go to the districts, and they can use the funding for things like future teacher clubs, direct support, including wraparound services to students, dual enrollment programs. And then the CUGMEC, which you also heard referenced, that those grants go directly to the higher ed institutions. Those are programs to increase the number of teacher candidates who are of color or American Indian teachers. It was previously known as Q, so you might be familiar with that acronym, which is Collaborative Urban Educator. So now it's the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Program. There is a bill currently moving that program from PELSB to the department. But right now that's administered by PELSB. There are expanded concurrent enrollment grants. You've heard about PSEO. So this is for districts to partner with post-secondary institutions to offer courses like Introduction to Education for secondary school students to earn dual credit. There are separately grants to prepare American Indian teachers, and those are grants that are awarded jointly to school districts and post-secondary education institutions. Those are named in statutes. There's four partnerships named there, but if there are additional funds, then other partnerships can receive those funds. And at least 80% of those grants are for scholarships. There are pathway preparation grants, which are to support teachers holding a Tier 2 license to move to a Tier 3 license through a completion of a teacher prep program or the licensure via portfolio process. In the last couple of biennia, the legislature also funded a grant to Black Men Teach Twin Cities. That's an organization that uses the funds to partner with school district elementary schools or charter schools to increase the number of Black male teachers at each school site. There is a separate alternative teacher preparation grant program. That program actually has not been funded for a few biennia now, but it is still in statute. There is an appropriation also in the 23 education budget bill funding the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers. And then there's a teacher residency program the legislature also funded. And there's PELSB has a rule with requirements for what those programs must include. It's a cohort-based model that places candidates for the full academic year to co-teach and participate in professional development, so somewhat similar to the Grow Your Own and these other more kind of experience-based pathways. You heard a little bit about the student teaching requirement that teacher candidates have to complete. Legislature has funded several programs to help candidates because those placements are generally unpaid. The ones in statute, the underrepresented student teacher grant program and the student teachers grants in shortage areas, those go through the higher ed budget. So there is some overlap between higher ed and what this committee does. So that's a discussion for that committee as well. Through those programs, student teachers can get a stipend of up to $7,500, and that's administered by the Office of Higher Education. Last year, the legislature also established a pilot program to support student teachers placed in Minnesota public schools to complete those clinical experiences, and that was limited to 8 specified teacher prep program providers. To give the teachers a stipend to complete their clinical teaching experience. A couple other programs that are a little bit different are the hiring bonuses, and that's a state program that reimburses districts for giving hiring bonuses to basically to recruit teachers to come from out of state to move here. And the bonus ranges from $4,000 to $10,000, depending on the field license. There's also was funding in 21 and 23 for a marketing campaign, for a teacher recruitment marketing campaign. Particularly focusing particularly on teachers of color and American Indian teachers. And then there are the programs to support teachers in specific field, special education you've heard about. So there's the special education teacher pipeline and the special education teacher apprenticeship program with the four intermediates that you heard about today. There was also in 2023 established a heritage, language, and culture teacher licensure pathway to increase the number of those teachers. There was not necessarily, not like Spanish. It's more of the other languages where a different type of program was necessary to help teachers get those licenses, and that uses the portfolio process. And then there's also the agricultural educator grants, which provides funding for districts to pay for an agricultural education teacher's salary and benefits for work over the summer in extended programs. And finally, there's direct financial support for teachers and teacher candidates. There's tax credits for a teacher who completes a master's degree up to $2,500 in particular subject areas. There's the teacher shortage loan repayment program, and that again goes through the higher ed, not through this committee, but a teacher can qualify for up to $1,000 per year for 5 years. There's the Aspiring Teacher of Color Scholarship Pilot Program, and that's up to $10,000 a year for up to $25,000 total. Finally, there was in 2023, the legislature appropriated funds for teacher licensing and exam fees to reduce the financial burden for candidates.
Very good. Thank you for your summary. And so, members, the reason we had Representative Mueller's bill as well as this presentation is during my time here, we've had, and before that, former Representative Erdahl was working on these as well as others. The teacher recruitment grants and preparation programs, each of them on their own has great ideas and stands for the merits that were there. Collectively, we're starting to get to a point where that can be too many and it can become unwieldy. And the worry that I have is at some point, if you get too many of these, once the pool starts to shrink, as we're looking now, they start looking at each other as competitive versus cooperative. And it's just a discussion that I wanted to bring, that we wanted to bring to the committee. So that's why we're here talking about these as we are, and talk about what that would be in the merits of these programs and that that program that we have as they collectively grow. So open it up for discussion. Representative Joaquin. Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that overview. It was nice to have everything in one place because it does seem a little overwhelming at times. I know each of the programs are very unique for the different types of teachers we're trying to recruit, and sometimes you need that. But I saw one thing that it seems to be a trend line, and maybe I'm wrong on this. Ms. Para, could you tell me, almost all these programs, if not all of them that we do, are focused on getting Tier 3 or professional teachers in our classroom. And that was the one thing I was a little concerned about, 1959, and I'll follow up with the testifier that was remote. It sounds like they do Tier 2. So I was just wondering if I'm accurate that most of the programs we do or put money towards, they're for tier three teachers.
Ms. Pera?
Chair Krisha, Representative Joaquin and members, yes, that the goal with most of those programs is to get teachers that qualify for the Tier 3 license.
Is that all? Yeah. All right, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. And also thank you to Ms. Para for this really comprehensive overview. I have a question that you may or may not be able to answer. I just remember last year, I think Morehead Schools were in the news for bringing in a bunch of Filipino teachers to teach because they speak English in the Philippines. And so I'm curious what kind of like culture exchange program might have been at MDE to do that, or just curious like how those kinds of programs are like implemented or why they happen.
Ms. Pera, would you have an answer to that?
Chair Krisha, Representative Lee and members, yes, the districts tend to do that on their own without any kind of state involvement. So they're generally, I think, here on H-1B visas, and sometimes they're immersion programs, for example, if it's a particular language where they need teachers that know the language, that are, you know, native speakers and can introduce students to the culture. But yes, there have been, that seems to be an increasingly popular route as well.
Representative Lee, can you follow?
Good, thank you.
Well, thank you, committee. You are well behaved. Oh, we have one more. I'm sorry, Representative Sensenmiera. I don't want to forget you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thank you for bringing this. I think what might be helpful to me, and maybe just something that Nonpartisan could follow up with, is, you know, I think, and it's hard when we just put money into things so we can't actually see the outcome yet, but like, be good to know, are these programs working, right, in terms of our goals around generally, like, are they helping us recruit more teachers, but also in the specific areas we're looking at, either subject-wise or tiered licensure. You know, I heard one of the cooperatives talk about, like, having a special education position that's been open for, I can't remember how many, like, that, you know, that's very alarming. So just whatever data you could provide around that would be helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmiera.
Representative... It looks like what? Nonpartisan Mabel?
Nonpartisan, I'm sorry. I didn't hear there was a question there. My apologies.
Oh, thank you, Chair Krisha, Representative Sensenmiera. I did want to mention there is one report that Pelsby has not, it's not due yet, but Pelsby is charged with putting together a report that looks at whether the programs that are intended to increase the diversity of teachers are working. So that's something they're developing. Pelsby does have the teacher supply and demand report as well. And for, you know, the CUGMEC program and a lot of these other programs do provide reports to the legislature on the number of candidates and how they're using the funding, but there isn't one kind of meta report that looks at each of those.
Very good. Thank you. Chair Youakim, things are going to go to the different phase starting next week, so I thought I'd give you a couple comments and then I'll close this off.
Thank you, Chair Krisha. I think it's going to go the same. We're still going to work together. Mm-hmm. Might sit closer, maybe. I think maybe we'll both be in the center. You won't like the corner. But, no, I just want to thank you for the way you've run the committee, and I love the educational pieces you've been bringing along the way, and I believe Polly Cirkvenek, our CLA, will be posting soon for Thursday. I think we decided Tuesdays for you, Thursdays for me, but I think we're going to be doing a lot of same work together, so thank you.
Agreed. And Chair Youakim, if you've noticed, I've always tried to refer to Chair Youakim as Chair Youakim in anticipation for this moment. And so what I would just say, first of all, this includes our agenda for today. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 18th, and we'll have a shift in operations. And for the committee, we'll be to even strength. So I just see what that means for you is we have to work with each other, because the only way we're going to get a bill out of here once we get Ways and Means Target is if that happens. And to those of you that are going to come to our offices, I don't anticipate it's going to mom or going to dad. We work pretty closely together, so try if you will, but we're going to hear. So with that, members, thank you for everything, and this committee stands adjourned.